Hey there, everybody. Welcome to the Layup Lines podcast. I'm Michael Chapman, joined as always by Seth Horton. And joining us today is a good friend of mine and a Titans and Rockets expert, James Duggar, or as he goes by now, Jimbo Duggar. We are live from Mississippi College. We're not actually live.
It's live in here.
It is live.
We're live, but the podcast is not currently live.
Yeah, you are listening to a recording, but that's fine. But Union had a basketball game last night here, so the girls won 96-71, and then the guys lost a close one. But we'll get into that a little bit later.
Get well soon, Charlie. Rip Charlie's meniscus.
Rip Charlie's meniscus. Yeah, James goes here at MC, so he's
happy about the worst game.
Yeah.
1-0 in the GSC, baby.
1-0 in the Gulf South. Well, our women's team is 1-0 in the Gulf South, so we're happy. But right now, we were just having an interesting conversation about really just about basketball philosophy and how Mike D'Antoni and Brad Stevens are opposite in every possible way.
And how Mike D'Antoni is ruining the NBA.
And how Mike D'Antoni is saving the NBA.
Yeah, Seth is a Celtics fan. James is a Rockets fan. So they just inherently have very different philosophies as far as basketball. So I'm just going to sit back and let you guys continue this conversation because this is just really, really interesting.
I love defense. I adore defense. I love defensive players. The Grindfather is one of my favorite guards in the NBA. I know he can't shoot at all. You can't play him in the late minutes. But gosh darn it, he will lock pretty much anyone not named James Harden down. That's a guard anyway. I love all the like defensive wings on Boston's team who can just switch out on anyone. Like that's how Boston is winning their games. Which coincidentally, the two top teams in the NBA right now, Boston and the Rockets. So it's really weird to see how different of a philosophy Brad has as opposed to Mike D'Antoni and how they're both making it work.
You see, a lot of people say that defense wins championships. My philosophy is offense wins the games that lead to the championships. The Rockets, they will win most. They'll probably have the best record in the NBA by the end of the season, but they're gonna have probably the worst defense. Probably gonna have one of the worst point differentials for a team that's winning, but they're gonna keep winning by big scores whenever they can. They beat the Suns. They were beating the Suns with 90-67 at halftime.
90 points and a half.
So 23 points. They were winning by 23 points. They let up 67 points and a half.
To be fair, the Suns are the worst defense in the NBA, especially at that point they were.
And that's like, yes, they are, but also facing good defense hasn't stopped the Rockets from putting up god-awful numbers.
They beat the Warriors 122-120.
And the Warriors are playing really good D.
Especially
this year.
That was game one. That was whenever everyone was healthy, everyone was doing well.
Yeah.
And it's just because the Rockets had a way to put up the better numbers than the Warriors.
And that game was as close as any game in the NBA has been this year. It was, I think, a tenth of a second Durant didn't get his game winning buzzer beater off. But they originally called it in and then they reversed the call, and it was just weird because it felt like nobody won that game.
And this is like, really James weird. Harden right now, I think he's averaging 29.9 points a game, and I think he's averaging 10.4 assists per game.
He's second in the league in assists to Chris Paul.
Yeah, to
and you're Chris, shooting a ludicrous amount of threes.
44.4% of the shots are three-pointers for the Rockets.
That's crazy.
54%.
Four out of every nine shots.
At home, the Rockets shoot 52% three-pointers. On the road, they shoot less.
52%?
That's ridiculous. Over half of their shots are threes. I don't think the NBA has ever seen these numbers.
And that's why the Rockets are changing the NBA, and they're getting more fans for the NBA.
NBA has been trending this way for a while. Like, for the last Five or so years. Ever since Steph Curry, the Splash Bros.
But then they have the teams like the Spurs and the Celtics, who are the fundamental teams. Who they go out there, they pass the ball three times before they take a shot. They don't settle for a three. They don't make a three because they want to. They settle for a three. Yeah. They'd rather take every single layup possible.
We'll hit, if it's a wide open three, we'll take it. But gosh darn it, layups are so much more likely to go in.
You see, but James Harden will stand 5 feet behind the 3-point line.
That's because a half court shot for James Harden is a layup.
James Harden will sit.
There was a time in the All-Star game last year when James Harden was trying to throw a pass and it just went in the basket from half court.
He did a layup and he did a lob for an alley-oop. And he accidentally made a half-court shot. James Harden is slowly becoming better than Steph Curry on offense, which is amazing to say. But James Harden is going out there, and he is like he'll stand up at the point, playing shooting guard, but he'll stand at the point and he'll run the entire offense. And he'll just look. He'll look at Clint Capella down at the post. He'll be open most of the time for a wide open alley-oop, and then he'll look over for Trevor Ariza or Eric Gordon. He'll be open. Or for
Ryan Anderson or Chris Paul. Everyone on that team except Clint Capella is a good 3-point shooter.
And then, James Harden and is no an one, offensive god.
And if no one else can, and if no one else is open, he'll sit there, cross one person up, and he'll choose either to drive in and make a perfect layup every time, never miss, or he'll drain a three in someone's face like he always does.
The two things he's improved on most this year is finishing around the rim. He doesn't miss when he gets to the rim anymore, which had been a problem in previous years, especially in his OKC days. And his step-back three-pointer is ridiculous right now. He'll take his pivot foot and his other foot, step back, and he'll get 4 feet. And his shot is so quick, you can't do anything about it. And you're worried about him driving because his rim finishing is so good right now.
He also is one of the nastiest people at crossing someone over. He can cross, he can shake someone out of their shoes with one little flinch because they're so nervous about him driving to the rim or stepping back.
James Harden is what happens when AAU just goes all the way to the NBA. And I hate AAU. Oh my gosh. Like, I get it. Like, it's fun to watch. For a lot of people, personally, I'm not huge into, like, the whole, like, I love flashy passes and stuff like that. I would much rather see someone get swatted on the low post.
So you'd rather see a Larry Bird type guy coming out, just having these amazing behind-the-back pass that leads to a layup rather than the behind-the-back pass that leads to a three-pointer.
If the three is open, threes with a hand in your face, I think is a bad shot. I'm big on basketball IQ.
Unless it's the Rockets, who have some of the best shooters in the NBA.
Unless it's James Harden or even Steph Curry and Klay Thompson. They can make any shot with anyone contesting them at all.
Yeah.
Yeah, because the Rockets, they have James Harden, Eric Gordon, Ryan Anderson, Trevor Ariza, Chris Paul. I mean, all of those guys can shoot threes with anybody in the league.
Eric Gordon is well on his way for a second consecutive sixth man of the year.
Yeah.
And James Harden's on his way to his first ever NBA MVP. Yeah. So, like, there's no way that the Rockets are going to be stopped right now, at least, it seems like.
Yeah, James Harden has finished as a close runner-up twice for the MVP. I thought the year he lost it to Steph Curry, he should have been the MVP. And I thought, honestly, last year against Russell Westbrook, it was very, very close.
Last year was probably the closest the race has been in a long time.
Yeah.
Because there was definitely a strong push for both people. But I think the biggest thing is that if the Rockets can go out and get one more big guy in the trade, if I've heard talks about them trading for Blake Griffin, if the Rockets can get Blake Griffin, that'll be the best big three, especially because they have a smaller three that are some of the best in the league right now too, with Clint Capella, Eric Gordon, and Trevor Ariza.
Okay, I'm gonna ask you a question, and I want you to tell me. Where do you think the Houston Rockets rank in defensive rating?
In defensive efficiency or?
Defensive rating.
I would say 28th.
What is defensive rating again? I'm sorry.
Points allowed per game, essentially.
Points per game, I'm going to say 27th. Defensive efficiency, I'll say 24th.
They rank 6th in the league. 6th.
What?
So we have the 6th best defense.
Yes. 101.6 points per game is the 6th best defense in the league.
Clint Capella is a really good defender. Chris Paul is a good defender. James Harden isn't nearly as bad as he used to be.
But. Still not good.
James Harden is what you do whenever you play as like Patrick Beverley on 2K against Steph Curry. That's what his defense is right now.
I just hate everything. It doesn't make any sense to me because Portland's number two and OKC is number three. Neither of those two teams should be as high as they are.
They've both actually played well on defense.
I know played well on defense, but when you look at their personnel, there's no reason they should be playing this
way. OKC, their personnel is some of the best defense in the league. Andre Roberson, Russell Westbrook, Paul George, and Steven Adams all starting. That makes up for any defensive deficiencies that Melo has. But Portland,
that's fair.
Just scheme-wise, has been phenomenal. Dame is not a good defender by himself. CJ McCollum is not a good defender by himself. But the scheme that they've run this year has worked almost to perfection.
And those point numbers can be very misleading because the Rockets' time of possession, they hold the ball until the shot clock goes out. Every time, unless there's an open three that James Harden just decides to take in transition. Yeah.
And then if it's not a contested three when the shot clock runs out.
If it's not a fast break, the Rockets are waiting until 1 second to shoot the ball, no matter what. That's why also they lead to a lot of they've had a good amount of shot clock violations and bad turnovers trying to get the ball to someone quickly. But that's why their defensive numbers are a lot better than you would think they should be.
Mm-hmm.
But if you look in the games where they're just blowing people out, where they're scoring a lot of points, they're also letting up more points. Like in the game where they won 142 to 118 against the Suns, one of the worst teams in the league. So there was no reason that they should let that many points up to the Suns. The only reason is because they scored 142, and 90 of them were in the first half.
Yeah. Yeah.
I hate Mike D'Antoni so much.
Mike D'Antoni is the best coach for James Harden.
He really is.
Probably.
The only coach that could do that kind of stuff for James Harden.
Yeah, because Kevin McHale loves defense. And,
yes.
But he couldn't get it out of James Harden because he wouldn't let James Harden do what he wanted to on the offensive end. And that was handle the ball and be the distributor.
Yeah, they tried to make Patrick Beverley the point guard, and Patrick Beverley should not have been the point guard for that Rockets
That's
team.
True. I'll give you that, but I just, the Rockets bother me. They bother my soul.
Even for defensive efficiency, the Rockets are fifth in the NBA. They give up 100.8 points per 100 possessions. The Celtics are first at 97.2. And then you've got Portland, OKC, and San Antonio at 3, 2, 3, and 4.
I'm pretty sure the Phoenix Suns are dead last in both of those categories.
Yep.
Yeah.
They give up 108.2 points per 100 possessions.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous.
Yeah.
The numbers as of like a week ago for Chris Paul, and he had only played 5 games when these numbers came out, but the Rockets were outscoring teams by 40 points per 100 possessions with Chris Paul on the court.
It's ridiculous. I'm just really big on fundamentals, which I love passing 3 times before you even think to take a shot. I love to watch plays develop and see what happens, because that's one thing that the Celtics do a lot of is run plays. They very rarely just freewheel it. I haven't watched a ton of Rockets, but I remember last season, it was a whole lot of, we're just going to give the ball to James Harden and let him do stuff.
There's 3 plays that the Rockets run. It's ISO with James Harden. It is the alley-oop, and then it is swing.
Alley-oop, pick and roll?
Pick and roll. Pick and roll.
Pick and roll.
Pick and roll. That's the big one. The pick and roll is the
Clint
big one.
Clint Capella is so good as the receiver in a pick and roll.
A pick and roll with Clint Capella is unbeatable right now.
Especially when James Harden or Chris Paul are the ones running the
James Harden ISO
because
is the most dangerous isolation
off.
In the
Yeah.
James Harden's ISO is the most dangerous isolation in the entire game.
If you slack off on James Harden, he will drain a 3 in your eye. And if you like double team him or press on him, he'll just dump it off to Clint, who's already at the rim by that point.
Yeah. And then if they send help defense to the middle, Clint Capella is a good passer from down there. He sees the court well, and he knows where to get it to.
And he's a fantastic offensive rebounder.
Yeah.
Clint Capella the other night had a line of 22 and 13. Yeah. With only one assist, but he had 13 rebounds.
Yeah. That's astounding. Like a normal night for Clint Capela. Yeah. You're never surprised to see those types of numbers.
I'm looking forward to seeing what the Rockets do on the Celtics. I think that's going to be a really interesting
game. When is that game?
That is at the end of this
middle
month?
Or later December?
Yeah.
That's going to be a fun game to watch. I think that's the most fun matchup in the NBA right now.
Just because how different it is.
Yeah, because of the two just conflicting philosophies.
The way that the team's going to win is making the other team play their basketball.
Yeah, and I have no idea who's going to assert themselves.
It's
going to
be impossible for... It's going to be on December 28th, by the way.
December 28th.
On TNT.
I'm excited.
December
28th. It's going to be really good.
Fun little Christmas break game to watch.
Yeah.
And it's going to be in Boston, too.
Because I think I'm driving on December 28th. I'm going to have to pull over.
Yeah.
If we're going to Florida, I'm going to have to just tell my parents, hey, let me off at this sports bar.
Yeah.
I'm not going to Florida you guys.
I'll call an Uber real quick.
Yeah, really. I mean, honestly, like the Celtics have so many wings, so many players that are almost the exact same player that they can switch on anyone. And it feels like you're just constantly being guarded by our best defender the way we have it.
Yeah. Jaylen schematically Brown, Jason set up. Tatum, Marcus yeah. Smart.
Terry Rozier,
yeah.
Like, Marcus Morris is even a really good defender this year.
Yeah.
Like, because Brad Stevens just brings out the best. He has the same philosophy in terms of, like, nurturing to your player that Pop does, which is, my player doesn't adapt to my system adapts to my players.
Yeah.
And he finds a way to bring out the best in every player on his roster.
And that's why Mike D'Antoni has worked for the Rockets, because
his system matches the players.
Right.
Yeah.
That's why Kevin McHale didn't work for the Rockets.
Because he did not want to switch his system up at all.
Yes.
And the big thing about the Rockets is, like you said, the Celtics, every one of their players, like all their wings, they're like the exact same players, even the bench. The Rockets have, other than James Harden, James Harden, every single one player is their own player. Mbah Mute and Capella are close enough, but they're very different. And then you have Nene, who is extremely different
than both of them.
And he still plays that almost like center and power forward position.
You'll kill us on the boards. You'll absolutely destroy us on the boards.
Yeah.
My biggest fear as a Celtics fan is that we're actually a pretty decent three-point shooting team. My problem is every time anyone shoots the three that isn't Al Horford or Kyrie Irving, I'm terrified.
See, the big thing
Marcus Smart.
Because Marcus Smart, Terry Rozier, Jaylen Brown's not a great three-point shooter.
He's gotten a lot better,
but he's still streaky.
If the Rockets have Chris Paul and Trevor Ariza,
if you
cover Kyrie Irving at least somewhat, as long as you don't let him just swerve through the defense and pick apart the entire interior defense, the Rockets won't have a problem covering Kyrie Irving.
Yeah.
With Clint Capela down at the baseline, that's the best part about it, is that Kyrie, he can swerve through everyone in the East, but the West is a different monster.
Al Horford's savvy enough on the low post that I think he can,
score
around Clint Capela.
Yeah, because Clint Capela is a very, very good defender.
But Al Horford is a friggin' offensive genius.
Yeah.
Not even in terms of, like, his ability to do things,
he's just really smart. Yeah, and Clint Capela isn't the smartest defender. He's just really athletic.
Yeah.
And
that'll come along. He's still young.
Yeah.
But
he's a great prospect, too. Like, he's going to grow to be a great center in the league.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
But
gosh.
This was a super fun conversation, guys. But we're 20 minutes in, and we've still got a lot to cover.
Yeah.
So
I want to
move on to Titans football. James,
I'll sit back
and
let you guys talk this one out.
James is our resident Titans expert here. I just want to know what you think. Obviously, the Titans have won 5 of the past 6, but haven't necessarily looked super impressive doing it. We've got 5 games left. We're 7-4. What do you think the Titans need to do down the stretch to make it to the playoffs? And then what do you think they need to do to win a playoff game?
To make it to the playoffs, the Titans need to match the Jacksonville Jaguars. At least. At the very least, they need to match the Jaguars. If we can make it to week 17 with either the same record or better, than the Jacksonville Jaguars. If we make it to week 17 with a better record than the Jaguars by two games, we're guaranteed in the playoffs at that point.
Yeah.
We're guaranteed with a division win. But if we make it in there with this, if the Titans win out right now, they win the division. So yeah. The division is in their hands. So that's the only thing they have to do is keep the division in their possession.
Right.
They lost it, and then they just gained it back after beating the Colts, which was the first time the Titans had swept the Colts since 2002, and the first time they had ever beaten the Indianapolis Colts in Lucas Oil Stadium.
Yeah, it's crazy.
In their entire life. So I think that's just amazing to me that they finally – that's an astounding stat. They've never even won in Lucas Oil Stadium until then.
Because the Titans were terrible for several years while the Colts were really, really good. But even the year the Colts went, I think it was 1-15 or 2-14 without Peyton, we still lost to them in Lucas Oil Stadium. And that was a crucial loss. We went 9-7. Matt Hasselbeck was the quarterback, had a really nice year. But
got hurt in that game, and Jake Locker came in and finished it out and almost led a comeback to win the game.
But
Jake Locker, man, missed that guy.
Yeah, we went 9-7 that year and missed the playoffs by a missed Miami field goal, though, because there was a weird tiebreaker where the Jets. It was the Jets against Miami. Yeah, we needed the Jets to come in and be a three-way tiebreaker with us and the Bengals.
Or we needed the Raiders to lose and be a three-way tiebreaker. But either way, both the Raiders won and the Jets lost.
Yeah.
So it doesn't.
Really, if we would have won that Colts game or some of the other really close games,
if we had beaten the Bengals, we would have won. We would have been in the playoffs, no doubt.
Yeah.
But and then to win a playoff game right now, our playoff team that we'd be playing would be who is it?
The Ravens.
Right now, it'd be the Ravens.
Yeah.
Okay, so right now I would say we could beat the Ravens.
Yeah, we
already beat them once, and we beat them at home, even with a Marcus Mariota terrible interception.
Yeah.
And that was with DeMarco Murray.
What's going on with Marcus this season?
Oh, I'll get to that in just a second. That was with DeMarco Murray not having a great game, but still, that was whenever he was battling his ankle and hamstring injuries. And right now he's getting better, but Derrick Henry is also heating up right now.
Yeah. But Derrick Henry needs to be the featured back.
They need a change from a pound through in between the tackles to an outside zone run, because Derrick Henry can tear up the edge better than any running back.
Him bouncing out to the outside is a beautiful thing, because he has a stiff arm with either of his arms that nobody in the NFL can tackle.
Derrick Henry's perimeter, his edge running is better than anyone in the NFL right now. He's also second in the NFL in out of the top 54. He is second in yards after contact, which is amazing.
Yeah.
So the problem with Marcus this year, I wouldn't even call it a problem. I would call it it's a sophomore slump after a not true first year. Marcus played, 12 games his first year. Yeah. Didn't get a full experience. Got hurt a couple of times. Had Ken Whisenhunt as a coach.
Yeah.
Which, can you blame him?
Ken Whisenhunt was a disaster.
Can you blame him for not doing so hot with Ken Whisenhunt? No. Ken Whisenhunt was a terrible coach. Then Mike Mularkey came in. Last year, we went, after going 3-13. I wish we could have done that. Going 3-13, going around and tripling our win total in 1 year, going to 9-7, missing the playoffs because of losing to the Texans earlier in the season.
And then the Jags lost.
And the Jags lost against the Texans.
And that's the Titans' last two winning seasons, we lost on the road to the worst team in the division in week 16 and went 9-7 and missed the playoffs by a tiebreaker.
And I can blame that not making playoffs on bad divisional play by the Titans.
Yeah.
We went 2-4 in the division.
You know what it was? Someone's in their eyes. Whole time.
The entire time.
Entire time.
I think something happened.
The ozone is getting eroded or whatever. And so the sunshine is just, way brighter than it used to be.
They stole all of our sunglasses. And the other team's hats.
Yeah, we don't have any visors.
If you look at the play, whenever Marcus broke his leg, his visor was cracked. So
yeah.
It was all because of the Jaguars.
Yeah.
Shad Khan.
Yeah.
But Marcus Mariota right now, I think he's gonna improve. He's on pace to have his best season in total yards. He's also on pace to have his worst season. He's actually already had his worst season
in interceptions.
His first year he had 11.
He's already got 12 interceptions in just 10 games.
But he's had 6 in the past 2. But in those games, I would say 4 of the 6 are his fault. One of them was a trip by Taywan Taylor against the Colts last week. He tripped on a route and just fell down.
Yeah.
And then another one against the Steelers was a tip ball that just perfectly landed in a receiver's hands.
There were some really bad picks in that stretch, too. Like the one to Cody Sensabaugh against the Steelers.
The Cody Sensabaugh, he actually came up to Marcus after the game and said, "I'm surprised he gave me that ball." And Marcus said, "Funny thing, man." And he knew it was just a bad throw. He couldn't take. He wishes he could take it back, but he can't.
Yeah.
And then if you look at his footwork's a little bit off right now because the offensive line is not doing as hot as they were last year just due to injuries. But
yeah. I think the biggest problem with Marcus this year has been his shotgun passing. And under center, which this is fascinating because he lined up in shotgun all of college. Under center, though, he's been a top 5 quarterback in the NFL. And off play action, he has been the NFL's best quarterback as far as QBR. But from the shotgun, he's thrown more interceptions than anyone in the NFL. And he's got, I think, the 33rd out of 34 qualified quarterbacks QBR from shotgun. So I don't know what's going on there. But Marcus just needs to be better from different lineups.
I think from play action, that's what the whole DeMarco Murray and Derrick Henry, whenever they're doing well, the Titans play action is lethal. And Marcus Mariota has not thrown an interception from play action at all season.
And I think 6 or 7 of his 9 touchdowns have come from play action. Like, and only 22% of the passes are play action passes.
The only touchdown last week against the Colts was actually a play action, and then he threw it to Delanie Walker. And they're just lethal with those play actions just because they draw in the linebackers. And Marcus is an amazing – he can read a defense really well. It's just he cannot always put the ball where it needs to be.
Yeah.
His play with Delanie Walker where he threw it into quadruple coverage over him perfectly landed in his hands where no defender can make it.
And he made –
That was a terrible decision. Great throw.
Yeah, he makes those types of throws 2 or 3 times every week even – like when he has a bad game,
and then but then you have the throw where he threw a pick, his first interception of the game. He threw it to he was trying to connect with Harry Douglas, and whenever he threw it, it was a great option to throw to. Harry Douglas had the inside on him, and he was gonna make a good play for a first down. But Marcus underthrew him and threw it behind him.
Yeah,
and he didn't follow through with his feet. So it was like he was a little bit under pressure and just kind of threw it.
Yeah. And he threw it to the right spot. It just wasn't zipped in there hard enough.
It was just low and it was slower and it was behind him a little bit. So it wasn't the best throw he could have made.
Yeah, I agree. But just going through the schedule here, and we'll do this real quick so we can get to our last segment. But going through the schedule, I just want you to tell me win-loss on each game.
Texans win.
And then the Cardinals.
I'd say the Cardinals was a very close win.
Okay.
And battle then, for the end.
And then
49ers. I say we embarrass them in San Francisco, and I'm going to enjoy watching because I hate San Francisco 49ers.
Okay, so that would put us at 10-4. What about the Rams? That's probably our toughest game left.
That second toughest game. I say the Rams can go either way. It might even be an overtime game. I can't say win or loss in that one at all.
Okay.
I'll
go loss then.
Because the Rams have been going with – the Rams, like, 2 weeks ago lost bad. They lost a bad game to the – was it the Chargers?
Mm-hmm.
But then this week they came out and
– It was the Vikings.
The Vikings.
Everyone has an off game.
But then they came out and they beat the Saints, who were the hottest team in the NFL.
Yeah, and that was without Marshawn Lattimore for the Saints, which I think hurt them a lot. Yeah.
And the Titans play situational defense. Because they play better defense to better teams and worse defense to worse teams.
Yeah. But we need to be more consistent on that side of the ball.
And then the Jaguars week 17, that's going to be – I predict that it's going to be a week 17 divisional title game. I think the Titans are going to win that one and win the division for the first time since 2008.
Okay, so 11-5.
Basically, the Titans are going to win out.
Everything, yeah. I think they can. They have potential to win. If Marcus – changes, if Marcus goes to more play action and plays more under the center, I say the Titans can win out.
But will they?
I can't say if they will or not. I say they can.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's fair.
I'm going to say 11-5. I think they win everything but the Rams. But yeah, so that's all we have for Titans football. I want to get to this liked segment real quick because I really want to talk about UT and Ole Miss and those coaching.
OSUC.
Yeah.
Court's in session.
Those situations. The court is in session. So, UT, guilty or not guilty for firing their athletic director?
Not guilty.
Curry. Not guilty.
They had to. They brought him in.
Slash and burn.
Yeah, they brought him in as a transition just to fire Bush Jones and take all the flack, and then they just fired him. That's perfect on their part.
That was
smart on their part to fire him.
Yeah, and then Philip Fulmer, who is the new athletic director,
did not get any of the blame. Idiotic choice for Philip Fulmer.
Why?
Because he was doing so terrible towards his end of his tenure at UT. There are a lot of people who still.
So, they went 5-7 his last year, but they won the East the year before.
So not guilty on firing their AD, but guilty on the new hire.
Yes.
Fair. Chat.
I'm saying not guilty for both.
Really?
I honestly think the Curry fire I would be closer to saying guilty on that than a Philip Fulmer hire. I think Philip Fulmer is a very, very strong hire for UT because all of the fans still love him and they will stand behind him. And they're with, because Philip Fulmer was like an assistant or like advisor or whatever to the athletic director. And there were just so many cooks in the kitchen that they couldn't get anything done. They fired Curry because they told him not to make a deal with Mike Leach in California. And then he agreed to a deal with Mike Leach in California. So they just had too many people trying to do too much. So just having Philip Fulmer in charge of everything, I think, is going to help them out. All right, Seth, you look excited about this.
Guilty, both accounts. Shouldn't have hired him in the first place. Raise all of UT to the ground. Move to Gatlinburg. Rename it something entirely different. Just start over as an entire school. They're trash. They're terrible. Their fans are the worst in the country. And I hate this school.
They still have women's basketball to cheer for, though, don't they?
Their women's basketball team is okay now. They had a couple of off years after the Pat Summitt era, but they're back to, like, I think 13th or 14th in the country.
I don't even remember the 80s name, but he was bad juju, and it was horrible to hire him in the first place.
Okay, what's the next one?
All right, so next team on trial, or actually, we're putting the NCAA on trial for giving Ole Miss a year of sanctions after they already self-imposed a one-year bowl ban. So Ole Miss isn't going to a bowl game this year, even though they went 6-6, and they also won't be going next year, regardless of what happens.
Okay. I cannot say with any kind of, like, degree of certainty that the NCAA is guilty for that. I mean, when you look at what Ole Miss did, like, 1 year of bowl ineligibility, like, that's, they, like, a year of bowl ineligibility for basically buying off players with hookers and blow.
Yeah.
Essentially. And, like, it's, they self-imposed. Good thing. Great thing. They're showing some remorse. I think, honestly, it was getting out ahead of the crap storm.
Yeah.
To be honest, they were trying to not get more, like, trouble headed their way. So, I don't know. But where I do think the NCAA is guilty is not paying players. Or at least not allowing players to be paid.
Yeah, I agree with all that. But I'm going...
So I have to go half and half on that. Like,
okay.
Ole Miss, definitely wrong for some of the things they did. Definitely should be allowed to pay their players.
Okay. Yeah, I'm going to say not guilty for the NCAA. And I'm going to flip the script, and I'm going to say guilty for Ole Miss.
Absolutely.
Because not even just the whole prostitute thing or whatever. They self-imposed a one-year bowl ban so that they wouldn't get a longer bowl ban.
That's PR 101.
Yeah. Yeah. So, but that just happens all too often in college football.
He's a public relations
major. I think it's bull crap. I think you should just hand it over to the NCAA and say, we'll take whatever punishment.
We have an expert. James is a PR major. Is this a classic PR move?
Of course. You have to save face as much as you can. You go out there and you say, oh, listen, we were in the wrong. We're going to go ahead and do this to ourselves. You're going to self-impose a sanction. You're going to fire everyone who was involved with it. And you're going to suspend the players who were involved.
So what do we call
Ole Miss? I agree with firing everybody who was involved.
Do we call Ole Miss guilty for just being good PR students?
I say that Ole Miss is guilty under letting it happen. Like, how do you let all that go under without fighting? Like, everyone knows about it. The AD knew about it.
Yeah.
You had to.
By the way, Hugh Freeze is not allowed to be a head coach for a year because
any NCAA division.
Yeah, because he did not.
Okay, I'm going to flip the script happening, again. Quote. NCAA guilty for not banning him for life.
I say the NCAA is not guilty though on banning Ole Miss. That was a perfect move for them. They have to. If they went and banned the entire Penn State team for 4 years because Jerry Sandusky did something on his own time and because Joe Paterno told his AD about it and the AD didn't do anything, Joe Paterno did everything he was supposed to do. He ended up getting fired and then he died.
And the statue was taken down.
He lost his winningest. He lost like 30 wins, which took away his title of winningest coach in college football history.
Yeah. So if you're going to buy hookers for your players, do it on your own time.
Yeah.
All right,
and not with a Ole Miss cell phone. The biggest problem was he had the separate cell phone. He was hiding it from his wife by using the Ole Miss cell phone. And then whenever the allegations came out that everyone knew about it, they took in all of the cell phones from all the team.
You know what I wanted to know?
Hugh Freeze said, "Oh, sorry."
What shady back alleys does Hugh Freeze hang out in that he just has hookers on speed dial?
You know what's even sadder? He had the opportunity to delete any personal calls that he wanted to from the record. He had a 1 week span where he could have deleted any personal calls. He did not think
those. He wanted to get caught. Spinza, why did he want to get caught?
He hated coaching for Ole Miss. You're right.
He knew he was only going to get 1 year. Now he can go coach wherever he wants.
I like it.
Hugh Freeze.
Good move by Hugh Freeze.
Good move by Hugh Freeze. Not guilty, Hugh Freeze.
There we go.
I say the NCAA should fine Hugh Freeze by forcing him to come coach Mississippi College next year.
Hugh Freeze is a PR genius.
No, in reality though, what Hugh Freeze did and what happened at that school was unacceptable. Just to be clear on our stances on this.
This is a
joke.
This is satire to an extent. This is a morals friendly, family friendly podcast.
We do not approve of prostitution.
We don't approve of prostitution. We don't approve of child molestation, and we don't approve of just general debauchery.
Now that we've got that out of the way, Hugh Freeze, not guilty.
Not guilty. PRG.
Hugh Freeze is going to MC next year. Look out. MC's going to probably fire the coach after next season. Hugh Freeze coming to the GSC, turning the whole organization around.
Going from 1-9 to 10-0. It's going to happen.
Let's go.
All right. Well, we'll see you guys next week. Tune in for another episode of...